Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the only podcast made by Chicago real estate agents for Chicago real estate agents. My name is DJ Paris. I am your host through the show, and we are coming up on our 70th episode, which is very exciting, and we just crossed over the one-year mark of doing the show. And when I started the show, you know, about a year ago, I wasn't sure really two things. One, would anyone want to listen to interviews with top 1% real estate producers in the Chicagoland area? I thought they would, but I wasn't sure. And then also, would 1% top producers even be willing to talk to me and share their ideas of how they grew their business and strategies? And thankfully, both of those answers to those questions were yes. And so we've had a tremendous amount of fun doing the show, and people seem to really like it based on the numbers from the listeners. So thank you for everyone that's done an interview on the show and everyone that's listened to an episode. And we have almost 70 episodes now. So if you're new to the show, please go back and listen to old episodes. This information that is provided by these top producers is really timeless. And it often is something that will give you the best possible education on how to grow your business, because you're hearing it from the people that know how to do that. So keep listening. Please tell a friend if there are any brokers in your office that are not aware of the show. Let them know. Or if there's any top producers that you feel could be a good fit because they're doing something unique or interesting, or they're just, you know, maybe it's not all that unique and interesting, but they're just out there doing a great job. We want to talk to them as well. And by the way, we are so backlogged on replying to suggestions. So if you've emailed us or written us on social media and said, hey, you have to talk to so-and-so, we have it in a list. We will eventually get to it, but we have almost 100 people that have written in that want to be on the show. So please keep sending those suggestions, but don't take it personally. If we haven't yet replied, we're just simply too busy, but we are so excited and thrilled and honored that people want to be on the show. So we will eventually get to you, and thank you for reaching out. Please also follow us on Facebook. You can find us at Keeping It Real Pod. Also, our website is keepingitrealpod.com. You can listen to every episode we've ever done. Obviously, find us on iTunes and Google Play and anywhere else podcasts are served. And now on to our interview with the great Stephanie Laverty. Today on the show, we have Stephanie Laverty from Jamison Sotheby's International Realty. Stephanie is an accomplished and dedicated broker associate who, above all, genuinely cares for her clients. Her mission is to provide expert advice and guidance so that buyers and sellers can truly find the home of their dreams or sell their home for top dollar. Stephanie prides herself on being a fierce client advocate by delivering top-notch service and partnerships that are unique, supportive, and built on trust. She believes mutual respect is crucial, strives to give each client a positive experience based on prompt and authentic communication. Real estate is not only about the transaction, it's about developing long-lasting relationships. Stephanie's warm demeanor, yet tough negotiation skills ensure that that her clients' best interests are at heart at all times. When Stephanie isn't helping people move, you'll find her out and about exploring our beautiful city here in Chicago. She spends time in her neighborhood with her puppy, Louie, and also enjoys running on the lakefront, which I should do more of, visiting new restaurants, hanging out with her close-knit family, and having wine with friends. And also, to put just a cap, Stephanie is in her fifth year as a broker, already a top 1% producer, which is a huge, massive, massive accomplishment. So welcome, Stephanie, to the show.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm excited to talk with you, excited to share my story a little bit, and hopefully add some value to your podcast here and the people that are listening.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. So let's talk about your story. How did you get into real estate?
So I was in the meetings and event industry for a solid 10 years after obtaining my undergraduate degree. And it was in that environment that I learned to work really hard and juggling multiple clients simultaneously, multiple personalities, multiple timelines, and, you know, essentially putting events together. And now when I look back, I see that that profession and that portion of my life really well informed the skills that I use in real estate, because as we know, we're often shifting and pivoting and putting out a fire. And at the end, I compare, you know, the event, whether that have been a party or a meeting or a conference or a trade show that I used to be planning, it's very similar to a closing, right? We reach the finish line.
You're right. I mean, there's a million steps. Even to putting an open house together, that is like hosting an event, right? I mean, it is hosting an event. So it makes perfect sense. I'm sorry, continue.
So, well, without really even knowing it, I was learning how to use these skills that would later really assist me in developing my real estate career. So I had decided, however, with that being said, I had decided that the travel portion of the meetings and event industry had really started to take a toll on me. I felt like I was in these great cities. Specifically, I remember a time when I was in Seattle and I really wanted to explore and go down to the water and eat some great seafood. And, you know, I was stuck in this freezing cold conference room for essentially a week. And then I flew back to Chicago.
Well, I'll pause you for a second because I was in Seattle this weekend. And being that it was not a work scenario, I was able to do all of those things you wished you could have done because you were obviously stuck in the conference.
In the freezing cold conference room. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I just started doing some reflection and self-discovery. And I had this conversation with myself, like, what do I really want to do when I grow up?
Right.
And I decided that I was missing something that was a personal fulfillment. You know, I was pulling off these events without a hitch. I was satisfying my boss and my clients, but I was missing something like in my soul, in my core. And after, you know, some conversation and research and things like this, I decided that I would go back to school to achieve my master's degree in counseling.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so I applied to DePaul for the school counseling program because I envisioned myself actually in a high school environment working with teens that were sort of struggling to find their way and a variety of issues that have been personally, you know, dear to my heart.
Sure.
It really interests me in, you know, making a difference in those lives. And so applied to DePaul, completed all of my coursework, took out a very hefty loan.
Sure.
Completed all my coursework and, you know, simultaneously decided to take a part-time job at a real estate company because I wanted to be able to, you know, go out for a beer or have dinner with friends. And when you're in grad school, it's hard to do that unless you have a little bit of income.
Sure.
So school was my main focus. Working part-time at a real estate firm was my side gig. I was creating marketing brochures. I was training agents on how to use Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And fast forward to over a year and a half later, a full-time position opened at that real estate company on the corporate side, being a support manager, essentially. And it was at that point that I decided to put my counseling degree on pause and not continue forward with the internship portion. I'd completed the coursework, so years of schooling, years of, you know, in classwork, yeah, or classroom work, and explore this full-time position with the real estate company. And I, you know, I struggled with it because I thought, well, I'm not a quitter, and why is this inserting itself into my life? But I'm a firm believer that opportunities cross our paths, and it's our decision whether we want to take that opportunity.
Right.
And so fast forward into 3 years later, I was still employed full-time with this real estate firm. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to use all of that counseling education and all of that schooling. I'm going to go forward with getting my license because I feel like that helping piece that I was always missing could be used in this real estate profession that I've surrounded myself with for the last 3 years. But I know I can do it differently than everyone else in this office. Because
wow.
I would hear people on the phone, you know, and I would see how they worked. And I thought, I want to be a real estate professional, but I want to do it my way. And I want to bring something different to people that are looking to sell or buy a home.
Yeah, I think that's, well, thank you for that story. I think that's particularly interesting because, and I'm someone who does not practice real estate myself. I work on more on the marketing side and in the corporate level. And what I've always thought is somebody who's kind of an outsider really is that like oftentimes I think, and I think the top 1% realtors like yourself completely understand this, but the reality of it is you are helping people, or at least if you take that mindset, you're often going to have deeper and more fulfilling relationships. Because at the end of the day, we were talking offline about this being such a digital world. You know, clients can find homes. They really don't need you for that, right? They can go to Zillow. Right. They can search. In fact, they do, right? They are going to Zillow and Redfin and all of the Trulia, et cetera. You are not the key to, I mean, maybe to go see the property. Yes, they need a broker, but ultimately to even just find a property, like anyone can sort of do that on their own. But it's every other step of the process, which is incredibly difficult, emotional, and really you do need guidance. You are a counselor of sorts, or not even of sorts. You are a counselor helping somebody through that transaction. And so I think that like makes perfect sense why those skills would translate over.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think that, you know, between my counseling background and my meeting and event planning background, those coupled together really have shaped my growing business and just using skills from there. And so in February of 2013, I decided to just hit the ground running, not look back, single woman with a mortgage, you know, and I was going to figure out a way to make this happen. I didn't have a contingency plan. I didn't have a part-time job. I didn't have any of that. I just said, you know, sink or swim, like figure it out. You can do this.
And that's it's incredibly brave too, because even out of all the top producers we've talked to, I've talked to in this podcast, and there's been dozens and dozens, all of them pretty much, even though they've gone on to great things, even all of them, you know, had a difficult first year. It's like, that's just kind of for most people how it goes. There are exceptions, but rarely. So not to interrupt your story, but I'm always curious, like, hey, you're like, this is what I'm doing full time. Can you talk about your first year at all?
Yeah, of course. So my first year of sales, I was Chicago Rookie of the Year.
Oh, I did not know that. That is huge, huge, big deal. So just so everyone knows what that is. So there's local associations, of course, there's Carr, there's Main Street, there's North Shore Barrington, there's a bunch. And Carr is the one that most people who live in the city are going to be members of. There's, gosh, probably over 20,000 members. Every year, probably somewhere between 3,000 to 7,000 new brokers join that are, you know, essentially in their first year. So what Stephanie is saying is she was the absolute top rookie of the year 5 years ago, which I did not know. And that is such a big deal. I can't even say what a big deal. That is like the biggest possible deal. So congrats on an amazing first year. Five years later.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. I still get the chills when I say it because, you know, like I said, I didn't really leave myself an option on how this would play out.
Now, everyone who's listening is like, how did you do that? And we were talking offline because Stephanie's like, I want to make sure I'm not boring. And it's like, no. Don't worry about being boring, because whatever you did to get to that is, you know, whether it may not sound super exciting, people are just dying to know. So what steps did you take in your first year that you think helped get you to that level?
Yeah, so my very first closing was 78 days after I began.
Wow, that's amazing.
And people told me, prepare for 6 months, prepare. Yes. You're never going to have a closing for 6 months. Right. Like, that's the industry standard. Yep. And I was like, okay, that may be the industry standard, but I'm going to do better.
Sure.
And, you know, I talked with the colleagues in my office that I trusted, and I said, there's two guys in particular that I really got along nicely with. And we go to lunch and we talk and stuff like this. And I said, I want all of your open houses.
Oh, so smart. So smart.
I want your open houses on Saturday. I want your open houses on Sunday. I want to have open houses at properties that don't normally have open houses. I didn't prescribe to the school of thought where make sure you select the type of listing in the neighborhood and the price point, all this stuff. I said, give me anything.
Sure.
I'll sit your $150,000.
Right. I'm not that busy. I will do it.
Right. Well, and the way that I looked at it is that anyone walking in that door has a slight interest in buying a home, whether it's now or 5 years from now, just even a slight interest. Right. So I'm better off spending 4 hours a day on each weekend day there, meeting these people, getting in front of these people, talking with these people, shaking their hand, building rapport, looking them in the eye, getting to know them a little bit, than I am, you know, just out randomly talking to someone at brunch or at a bar or something like that. As you're getting started, right?
And that's a really strong point is, yes, getting out and meeting people is better than not getting out and meeting people, but getting out and meeting people who are specifically looking to buy a home is an even more targeted conversation. So it makes perfect sense.
And thank you. And, you know, I just worked the hell out of these open houses. I would be on time. I would be professionally dressed. I would have music playing. I would talk with the people about them and not about the home. I would never try to sell the property, not that I wasn't interested in helping my colleagues sell the property, but I was interested in talking with those people and then talking about the home and what their needs were. Because real estate, you know, I think where some people go wrong is, you know, we're posting all these pictures of gorgeous kitchens and pretty bathrooms, and that's all well and good, but real estate's about the need. Why are we moving? What is going on in our lives? You know, are we getting married? Are we getting divorced? Are we having children? Death, sadness, happiness, all these things. And I think too often we're obsessed with the fixtures and finishes and we're not obsessed with the people.
That's a really strong point. I think you're right. And also, you know, for brokers that are just posting, hey, look at my new listing on Facebook, like nobody cares, you know, because most, I mean, it's not that nobody ever cares. It's that most people are going to go, okay, that's fine. That's nice. But it doesn't really probably have anything to do with them, right? Their situation, they might not be interested in moving. I could talk about Facebook all day, but you're right. I think you're right. This idea of getting beyond sort of the superficial aspects or the more tangible aspects of the transaction and getting into the more of the emotional. And I know for me too, like even when I bought my first condo when I was 30, I guess. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't understand any part of the transaction. And I went and saw a place and eventually I always walked in. I was like, okay, this is the place. And then I turned to my realtor who's great, amazing. And I said, when can I think about this over the weekend or when do I need to make an offer? He's like, you need to make an offer Monday morning by 8 o'clock. Like you have to, or else this will be gone. And it was, and if he hadn't have said that, I wouldn't have known to do that. He was also a car rookie of the year, believe it or not, a million years ago. But I trusted him. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And he guided me throughout the whole process. So I think that's a really important point is that, you know, emotionally I was like, this is the right place. And I had to turn to him and go, now what do I actually do? He was like, okay, here's how it works.
Well, and that's, thank you for bringing that up because that's something in my first year, I had a document and I actually have to give credit to a friend in the industry, Joey Chiappetta, who sat with me and said, you know, something that has worked for me, Steph, is that I've put the steps of the purchase process in a document and I'm constantly tweaking it. I'm constantly refining it. I'm constantly modifying it. But having these steps allows you to feel like a teacher and an educator and someone that's providing guidance and someone that is, you know, the strategic negotiator and not the person that is scheduling the showing and opening the door. And that's like always resonated with me. And so I started that document. And since then, the document has evolved many times, so much recently as a week ago. But, you know, really focusing on the steps and the education and like you said earlier, buyers have information readily available at their fingertips. They probably find a listing before I do if they have a Redfin alert on.
Well, and specifically, if they're walking into an open house, I mean, maybe they just walked by and saw the sign or they saw the open house listing online somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, you know, I think in my first year, I was constantly trying my best to become a valuable resource and not someone that opened a door. And just keeping that as my like my guiding principle.
And, so I want to go back to one quick thing on the open house because I think this is so important. So what Stephanie did is basically begged people in her office, I will do any open house for your listings. I will show up. I will, you know, et cetera. And then, of course, buyers walked in unrepresented, and she would, of course, have those conversations. I am curious what you would do after they left. So let's say it was a, you know, Saturday open house. When would you contact them? Obviously, it would depend on the conversation, but when, what would you do after that? Once you've captured their information, you had the conversation, and then they leave. How do you proceed from there?
So before hotspots were as readily available as they are now, I paid for one on my phone because I wanted to be able to have Wi-Fi in the open house, not for a stupid sign-in sheet where everyone, you know, puts a typo because they really don't want your email address.
Right.
You to have their email address, I mean. But because I wanted to be able to say, and hopefully this is helpful to newer brokers in the business, but okay, well, what do you think of this property after I've built rapport and they've taken a quick tour and they come back to talk to me in the kitchen? Yeah, we like it, but we wish we had a bigger second bedroom.
Right.
And I can say, hey, wait, come here for a second. Let me just pull up a quick search on the MLS. They would come to my computer, to my MacBook, look over my shoulder, and I would say, well, did you see this one right down the street? And
awesome.
It would say no. And I said, well, let me send it to you via the MLS right now, because you know what? You can take this brochure and you can find this online. But if I can send it to you right from the MLS,
right,
you have all of the great details right available at your fingertips. And they're excited because you're giving them something they want. And I'm excited because I'm capturing their legitimate email address.
That's very smart. And now you can really market to them indefinitely because you've captured their. But that is a really, yes, really intelligent way to guarantee that you get their actual contact information. And by the way, it's not really, there's no trickery. You're actually giving them value. So of course, why wouldn't they want to give you that? It's not just, hey, could, you know, sign in this sheet, which again, you are going to get some bad email and phone numbers that way. Very smart. No one has ever suggested that on the show. So that is a huge, huge tip for people doing open houses. Very, very smart.
Thank you. And, you know, I would follow up that same day. I wouldn't wait until the next day. I'd go home that night, and before I went out on a Saturday night or before I did whatever, I would do all my follow-up. I would complete my follow-up. And my follow-up was never like, can you give me some feedback about the home?
Right, right.
Yeah, like, what would you change? That's so boring. It was just, hey, it was great to meet you. I enjoyed chatting with you. I hope you enjoyed your time with me as well. I'm a full-time broker. I'm available to you. Please know I'm always a phone call or email away. And, you know, I've had people contact me 3 years later saying, I met you at an open house in 2014 or something, and you stuck out because you didn't pressure us. You were just, you know, not to toot my own horn, but it felt like people were comfortable, you know, reaching back out to me a few years later.
Yes. It makes all the sense in the world. So you were doing open houses essentially every weekend, I imagine, until you got too busy.
Yeah, I did. I worked really hard in my first year. You know, and I still work really hard, of course, but I needed those contacts. I knew once I had those contacts, I'd be okay.
Sure.
Because I would nurture those relationships and, you know, kind of what we were talking about before we jumped on here, the relationship component has become huge in my business. I mean, it's the source of my growing business. So in my first year, my goal was to, first and second year, to be fair, I did 6.1 my first year and 11.5 my second. But in those first two years, my goal was to meet, to network, to grab all these names, to put good potential prospects in my database.
Sure.
Not keep it on a, you know, piece of paper, but really put it in my database and keep a pulse on these people.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, so earlier when Stephanie and I, before we started, we were kind of talking about what we would discuss. She goes, well, this is just going to be kind of boring because, you know, and it's so funny because it's anything but boring, but it is exactly how brokers should really do it. Right. And so in your first year, I have a question. So, and again, it depends on the open house, but how many leads would you average, or would you get on an open house? Would you average at least one? Would there be more?
That's a good question. So I obviously wanted to meet as many people as possible, but I would justify my time if I had a connection, not someone that was ready to buy in 6 months, not someone that was ready, but I felt like I had a connection with someone.
Right.
Which is harder to measure because it's only one-sided, right? Like, I don't know how that person was feeling, but enough to feel like, oh, you know, we connected, and that was worth my 2 hours. I met one person. And oftentimes you'd meet two or three that you'd feel that way. And sometimes, frankly, you'd meet none.
Right.
Depending what was going on in Chicago that weekend and all the other variables that we deal with as real estate professionals. But if I could get one connection out of an open house, I felt like that was worth my energy and my time.
Yeah. I imagine, and I know you're wrapped up in your own production now with your own business, and obviously very, very busy. But I imagine you probably still would suggest to people who just get their license, this year, to continue that process of ask other brokers in your office to do open houses. I suspect that, I would imagine that strategy is really no different today than it was 5 years ago as far as its effectiveness.
With the asterisk of don't be greedy and, $250,000 buyers are just as good and a better use of your time than $1 million buyers.
Sure.
Beggars can't be choosers.
That's right. I'll tell you a funny story. So I don't know if you know Nico Apostle. He's at Coldwell. Now he's at Keller Williams. And I had him on the show. He's, the greatest guy, nicest guy ever. And he was telling me what he did, and you'll love this, for open houses. He did the same approach his first year. I think he was like 23. He's like, nobody is going to list a $1 million home with me. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a moron. Right. And so he said the same thing. He goes, I just went to everybody in my office. I imagine it was Coldwell Banker. And he said, I will do any open house. And, and he just did them. And but he went one step further, which I love this. And I'll just say this to the people who haven't heard that episode, although they can go back and find it. He said what he did is the same thing you did, but he would also show up about an hour early. And he would walk around very politely, because he's such a polite, nice person. He would walk around to the neighboring homes, and he would just very, sort of softly knock on the door and go, hey, didn't mean to bother you. Just wanted to let you know that I'm doing an open house for your neighbor down the way. And here's my card. If you want to come by and check it out, feel free. And that was all he would say. And it was really smart. I said, I was kind of like, oh, that's smart. He goes, well, the reason why it's really smart is because everybody's interested in what their neighbor's home looks like. So he said, I'd get people just to walk over. And I was like, that is brilliant. So if you're doing an open house and nobody's walking in, maybe walk very kindly and politely, knock on a few people's doors and say, hey, if you want to come check it out, you can. But I always thought that was kind of a smart approach if it was, if you didn't have anyone coming.
You're right.
Yeah. So that was, and by the way, we should mention Stephanie has never bought leads. Like every deal she's done, she's sourced herself. And I imagine almost all of her deals at this point come from referrals. So this is truly an organic build, and she's done this all herself. Let's talk up. So was that the major driver for leads for you in your first year was open houses?
It was. Yeah. I didn't spend a ton of money on farming necessarily because I didn't know where to farm or what to farm or what to say. But open houses and, referrals from people that basically said, we'll take a chance on you.
Sure.
My brother-in-law said, okay, Steph, you can restart my garden condo investment over at Roscoe and Selfridge. Uh-huh. And I remember sitting at his kitchen island with my sister and Natalie and Danny going through the listing documents and not even knowing what the heck they really said at that point and just laughing my ass off because he's like, you are clueless. And I said, well, part of this whole thing is faking it till you make it, right? And, I was lucky to have a few people know that I was a hard worker and that they could trust me and the rest would hopefully figure itself out with their collaboration and patience. And so, but beyond, some family and friends that were willing to take a chance on me after I begged them, essentially, it was the strong portion of my first year was due to open houses and also, rewarding people for giving other people my name. I'm still very passionate about that. I don't pay a referral gift when I close. The second someone connects me, I think this is important for people too, if I'm hopefully bringing some value to this conversation, but the second someone connects me to a friend, family, colleague, whatever, I send them almost a $50 gift, including shipping.
Wow. Remind me to start sending you all sorts of, that's amazing.
not that I'm, you know, money bags or something, but, you know, everyone likes to be appreciated and to be thanked.
Yes.
And I think we've gotten so far away from that. So I have an arrangement with a company called Good Caramel, and they have these great little caramels, and they send five caramels in a little heart box for me. And with a thank you note that whether or not this person decides to reach out to me or whether or not they hire me to buy or sell, I totally appreciate that you were able to confidently recommend them to me, or recommend me to them, rather.
Yeah.
You know, and so often people send thank you notes or gifts once you close. And it's like, well, that's not really right. Someone should be thanked and praised the second they even consider you.
Yeah, they've already provided value. So by passing your information along is the value. So that's what should be rewarded. Right. So you're so right. And I want to piggyback on that with a story, something that's just happened to me yesterday. So I, what I do in my job is I recruit realtors for our firm. And we have relationships mm-hmm. with a couple of the real estate or with one of the real estate schools. And so I often go in when the students are in the process of taking their class and I say, oh, by the way, when you pass your exam, come look at our firm, you know, and I bring in pizza and that's really no big deal. But I always do this. And I've done this over the years and I've probably done this in front of at least 1,000 students. And just yesterday today's Tuesday. Just yesterday, this is the first time I received, and so last Thursday, I went to one of the schools. I did my little 30-second spiel, brought in pizza and said, okay, guys, give us a call. Give me a call if you want to learn more about what we offer. And I got a thank you card in the mail from one of the students. I don't know. He must have just found the address of our firm and sent it to me. He wrote me the kindest, nicest note saying thank you for the pizza, which was like no big deal. And he said, I really appreciate you coming in, talking to us for a few seconds about what blah, blah, blah. And I went, this is the only, and I, out of 1,000 people who I've hopefully provided value to, even not even just talking about our firm, I say, here's a couple things to think about when you want to, like, you know, join a firm. He's the only one that has ever written me a thank you. And I was like, I will never forget that guy. Now, I don't know if he'll end up ever joining our firm or not, but I was like, wow, all I did was bring this person pizza, but they immediately sent me a thank you. And I was like, out of 1,000 people I've talked to, only one's ever done that. So like the power of a acknowledgement over something that provided value to somebody is such a huge thing. And I appreciate, I think you're right. Like many brokers are going to send a closing gift. Like that is pretty commonplace and certainly a nice thing to do, but it's kind of like, in a way you could say it's like when your, you know, insurance agent sends a happy holidays card. It's like, okay, well, she also, or he or she sent 2,000 of those out, you know, and it's just stamped with their signature. And it's like, it'd be cool to get a card that goes, hey, you've been with me 13 years. I just wanted to say thanks. That was really great. You know, I really appreciate your business. So anything that goes a little bit above and beyond, like the, hey, thanks for the referral, before that referral even becomes a client is very unique.
Thank you for that.
Any other tips? So I've taken up a ton of your time. So what, any other suggestions you have? Oh, and by the way, I wanted to ask you this. So now you are this top producer, you're in your fifth year, you're crushing it. You're doing a great job. I'm curious how often brokers ask you to do open houses for your listings. Is it common? Are you surprised that it's maybe not as common, or are you getting a lot of that?
I'm surprised that it's not as common.
We have 600 realtors at our firm, and I will tell you, they would say almost all of them would say the same thing.
So, mm-hmm. It's funny to me. It's like you have to put the work in if you want to succeed in this business, and it doesn't come easy. And you have to give up your Saturday afternoon. You just do.
Well, and you're doing the listing agent a favor, or at least most of the time they'll probably say yes. Not all, maybe not always. They might have a different relationship with the seller that would prohibit you from going in there, and that's okay. But you're likely doing them a giant favor. So, or at least, you know, making the seller feel like something's going on and happening. And all you ever have to do is ask, and the broker will tell you if you can do that or not. And it's,
right. And hey, guess what? When I have an opportunity that maybe I can't handle because, you know, it's just me in way of my structure, I have a full-time unlicensed assistant. And obviously, you know, she does not work on work directly when it, on open houses or with right. showings and things like that, right. because you can't. But when I have an opportunity, I mean, there's times when I'm at capacity and, you know, my thing is I won't take a piece of business unless I feel like I can give those people 100%. Right. So if you've recently offered to host open houses for me and gave me some good feedback and you did a great job and my clients were thrilled that, you know, we had that opportunity, you're going to be front of mind for me. So as a new agent, I think definitely seek out those opportunities and build the relationship with that person that might need some help.
And then I would like to finish with I know you had just won a pretty major deal on the construction side. Do you mind talking about that or just telling us why you think you won that business and sort of, you know, as maybe more advice even for our brokers listening out there?
Sure. So I recently learned that I was hired to sell a new construction project in Logan Square, ground up. And these people had interviewed a large handful of brokers and they decided to select me. So whenever a seller or buyer says that, yep, you know, I'd like to move forward with you, I always say, thank you so much. I know you had many options. And what was it that made you feel comfortable working with me? And these particular people said, well, we felt that you were more passionate than anyone else we spoke to, which I really love because I am super passionate about what I do. And obviously when the energy in my voice is like, I get excited about real estate. And secondly, you spoke a lot about the relationship component and how that's important to your business. And, you know, we want someone that values that as well because we operate that way. And I think, you know, all of us in this crazy profession, can be so transaction focused, like, you know, that appraisal just came in low or that inspection was terrible and like so tactical and logistical. And when we can really think about the relationship piece and the bigger picture of it all, and I give a lot of credit to Jim Miller for instilling that thought process in me, you know, it's more about the big picture and the people. And yes, we have to keep our deals afloat, but to speak to that relationship piece and wanting what's best for your clients, I think that goes a really, really, really long way.
Yeah, well, obviously it did, at least with this client, which is a big, big deal. And when construction opportunities come up, yeah, you can bet that they definitely looked at more than a few names because, you know, of course, that's just the due diligence process. So to win that even in your fifth year, when you're up against probably people that have been doing it much longer, is quite impressive. So congrats on that success, although not surprising, but certainly a cool thing. All right, we are going to wrap this up because I know you're busy and you have provided so much incredible value. I think we could just stop there and we can always have you on for a part two. But for now, if there are any buyers or sellers listening who would be interested in talking with you about a real estate transaction, what's the best way they should reach out to you?
Whatever's best for them. They can call, text, email.
Can you give your
tweet, Instagram direct, whatever.
What's your phone number and email?
So my cell phone is 847-903-8589. I am a city agent. However, I have retained my very first cell phone number from growing up, hence the 847 area code. And my email address is Stephanie, Stephanie, at Stephanie, Stephanie, Loverde, Loverde.com.
And you can also visit her at StephanieLoverde.com as well. Well, Stephanie, thank you so, so much. It was a real pleasure talking to you today. And I think this will be one of our more listened to episodes, maybe even our most listened to episodes. So I'm really, really excited to get this out to the audience. And again, thank you. And I guess on behalf of Stephanie and myself, we will see you on our next episode. If you are a broker, which of course most of you are listening are, tell your friends about the show. We have thousands of listeners, but we can always use more. So anyway, Stephanie, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you for having me. I hope I was helpful and provided some value. And I look forward to talking with you soon.